For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is May the 23rd, and we are in Parshas Matos, and we are on page 902 at the bottom, the very bottom of 902. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'ez hamidyonim. Take revenge for the b'nei Yisrael from the Midyanim, from the Midian nation. Achar te'asef al amecha. Afterwards, you will be gathered into your nation, which means you will die. This will be the last major thing you're going to do in your life, and then you're going to die. This is the last major task or mission that I'm giving you. So we are now about to read and learn about the Milchemes Midian, the war with Midian. What did Midian do to the Jewish people that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to take revenge from the Midian people? And the answer is that after the incident with Bilam, when he attempted to curse the Jews and it didn't work, then he gave advice to the Moab people and the Midian people that they should send their daughters out to seduce the Jewish men and cause them to sin. And in so doing, Hashem will bring a punishment against the Jewish people, which is exactly what happened. We read about it at the end of Parshas Balak and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. At that time, we saw that the plague ended when Pinchas killed Zimri and Cusbi. Cusbi was a daughter of Midian, of a Midian prince, a Midian, one of the Midian leaders. We'll talk about him soon. And when Pinchas killed them, so that ended the plague. Back in Parashas Pinchas, if you hold the place here on page 904, turn back just a few pages to the, towards the beginning of Parashas Pinchas, on page 876, there it says, after telling us in the first paragraph of Parshas Pinchas about Pinchas having killed Zimri and Cusbi, and telling us a little bit about each of them, then it says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimor, in Pasuk Tes Zayin, verse 16, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Tzoror es hamidyonim bihikisem osam, which the translation is, harass the Midyanim and smite them. Kitzorim heim lachem, for they harassed you, asher niklu lachem al dvar pa'or, through their conspiracy that they conspire against you in the matter of pa'or, because not only did the girls seduce the men, but they also got them to worship avodah zara, idolatry, the idolatry of pa'or. Ve'al dvar kozbi vas nesim midyan achosam, and regarding Cusbi, the daughter of one of the heads of Midian, their sister, Hamukav Yom HaMagefa, who was struck down on the day of the plague, Aldavar Por, regarding the matter of Por. So here already, back in Parshas Pinchas, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people that they are to harass and smite and strike against the Midianim. But it doesn't happen yet. That's just the command that it's going to happen. When does it actually happen? Here in Parshas Matos, we've had a few different rules that have happened in between. We've had the counting of the Jewish people. We had the Karbonos Musaf that were discussed at the end of Parshas Pinchas. We had the discussion of oaths and swears that were mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Matos. Now we get back to the story of the Jews having to take revenge or punish the Midian nation. Now, this war is going to be a watershed event in many, many ways. We're already told then it's a watershed event because Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is your last mission. Clearly, the last mission of Moshe Rabbeinu is very significant. But we're going to find a lot more going on in this war and the aftermath of this war that is going to affect a lot of things that we've learned already and that we're going to learn about, and in many ways will serve to define the Jewish people here at the end of the 40 years of the desert. Because we're now, they're on the cusp of going into Eretz Yisrael. They had been on the cusp of going to Eretz Yisrael before, and now they're going to be there again. And this war is really going to set the stage for that. Before we read further, let's hold the page here again on page 904, and let's turn back and figure out who is Midian? Where does this nation come from? Like all the nations of the Chumash, it starts with a single man. No different than Bnei Yisrael, which starts with a man named Yisrael, or Yaakov, and we are his descendants. Mitzrayim starts with a man named Mitzrayim. Plishtim starts with a man named Plishtim. Moab starts with a man named Moab. Ammon starts with a man named Ammon, or Ben-Ami. And Midian starts with a man named Midian. And then he has many children and descendants, etc., and they become a big nation. So who is this person, Midian, who was the father of this nation, which we are now commanded to strike against? So let's hold the pace here at 904, and let's turn back to the end of Parshas Chaye Sara.
That's way back.
Well, if we're looking for the beginning of a nation, we're going to be somewhere in the beginning of Bereshis. The truth is, Chaye Sara is actually a little late to find a nation that started. Most nations begin in Parshas Noach. That's where the 70 nations are listed. Midian is not listed over there as one of the 70 nations. So, who is Midian? So, if we look on page 120, that's right. Page 120, the beginning of Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25. Vayosef Avraham vayikach isha ushma Keturah. Avraham continued after the death of Sarah, and he took another wife, and her name was Keturah. Chazal tell us Keturah was Hagar. Hagar, who was the mother of Yishmael, who had been sent away with Yishmael. Now Avraham takes her back. Vatelelo, so she bore for him, she had children for Avraham, many children. Es Zimran, ves Yakshan, ves Midan. Now we have to take out our highlighter pen. Ves Midian. Midian is the fourth son of Keturah to Avraham. Ves Yishbak, ves Shuach. She had two more sons. She had six sons for Avraham, the fourth of whom was Midian. That was his name. The Torah continues, tells us a little bit about the second born Yakshan. V'yakshan yaladas Sheva ves Dedan. He had two sons, Sheva and Dedan. Uvnei Dedan hayu Ashurim uletushim uleumim. Those are the sons of Dedan. But then we have a discussion of the sons of Midian. Uvnei Midian. Who are the sons of Midian? Let's count them. Epha, va'efer, va'chanoch, va'avida, va'elda'a. So Midian has five sons, whose names are Epha, Epher, Chanoch, Avida, and Elda'a, Kolela b'nei Keturah. All of the above, the past several psukim, the past several verses, are the sons, the descendants of Keturah. So Midian and Midian's five sons are children of Avraham and Keturah. Are they Jewish?
Did she convert?
Okay. Good question. Did she convert? Could there be anybody who is Jewish who does not come from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Keturah and her sons, Keturah marries Avraham. Her sons come from Avraham, but they do not come from Yitzchak or from Yaakov. Her sons are similar to Yishmael. Ishmael comes from Avraham. Esav comes from Yitzchak, but only we come from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So they certainly have some status. In fact, there's a discussion in the Gemara whether the Bnei Keturah, the sons of Keturah, had to have a bris milah. Why would they have to have a bris milah?
Well, Yishmael did.
And Hashem told Avraham, your children have to have a bris milah. The Gemara concludes that Keturah's sons, those six sons that we listed, were required to have a bris milah, but not their children. Meaning that of Avraham's descendants, the only ones who are required to continue the mitzvah of milah beyond that first generation is us. We are required to continue it. But the other sons of Avraham, they, as his sons, had to have a bris milah, but it did not need to continue beyond his sons. So evidently Midian himself, the man Midian, had a bris milah probably when he was 8 days old. But his descendants do not have a bris milah. They're not required to because they're not descendants of Yitzchak. So we are dealing here with a nation that comes from Avraham. Now Avraham is called Avhamon Goyim, that he is the father of a multitude of nations, not just the Jews, not just Yishmael, but many, many nations. And he's considered to be the father of many nations. So it is not shocking to find a nation that comes from Avraham. But it does give us a little bit of context to understand that Midian comes from fine heritage, comes from Avraham. And Keturah, who at this time was a tzaddikus, she was behaving properly at this time. Hagar has her ups and downs, but in this case, Keturah is a praiseworthy name for her, and she was behaving properly. So Midian comes from there. So what do we know? Let's turn back to our page now on 904. What do we know about the history of Midian? We have this nation called Midian. They lived somewhere in the southern desert, south of Eretz Yisrael. That's where the Midian people lived. Whether it was south directly, whether it was on the Sinai Peninsula, whether it was on the Arabian Peninsula, I'm not sure exactly what area the Midian people lived, but it was somewhere in the southern area of, south of Eretz Yisrael. So, what do we know about Midian other than the fact that they come from Avraham and Keturah? And also, what we find over here, that they were involved in the getting the Jews to sin, and then now they are going to be punished by the Jewish people with a war. So what do we know about them? So there is a very, very, very famous person who comes from Midian. Who would that be?
Ruth.
Ruth is from Moab, which is a very good guess. It's a very good guess.
Shoot.
So, but there is a very, very famous person that comes from Midian.
Balak himself?
No, he's actually, Balak is also from Moab. What did Rashi say over there? He was from, you're right. He was, Mesiche Midian. I think he was also from the princes of Midian. You might be right. But even more famous than him, and that would be Yisro. Yisro comes from Midian. When Moshe Rabbeinu in Parsha Shmos runs away from Paro, he runs to Midian, which means that Yisro comes from Midian, as does Tzipporah, Moshe's wife, is from Midian. This is why when the Jews were coming in the beginning of Parashas Chukas, when the Jews were coming in to, the beginning of Parashas Balak, when the Jews were on the doorstep of Eretz Yisrael, and we had just won these incredible wars against Sichon and Og, and taken over the area of Eiver HaYarden, the east bank of the Jordan River, when that happened, the people of Moab were terrified, because they lived right there in the vicinity, and they were afraid that we would also conquer them. So they sent messengers to Midian to find out, how do we handle this nation that is led by a man named Moshe, who we know spent a lot of time in your country? Tell us about this man Moshe. How do we defeat him? Moab people asked Midian people. And the Midian people said, his strength is with his mouth. That's his power. You need to find someone whose strength is with his mouth. And that's why they sent to Bilam. Because Bilam's strength was with his mouth, and Moshe's strength was with his mouth. They figured they can fight fire with fire. But that information about Moshe Rabbeinu came from Midian. Midian, who saw the growth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from Mitzrayim according to the mainstream opinion. He ran away when he was 40 years old and came back when he was 80 years old. So he was away for 40 years. That's a long time. And the bulk of that time he spent in Midian. And so the Midian people had some information about Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how they got involved in this whole thing with Bilam. How did the Midian people get involved anyway? Because the Moab people, who were right there next to where the Jews were, got scared and asked for help from the Midian people. So the Midian people got involved. And therefore, when Bilam gave advice that the girls should go and seduce the Jewish men and get them to not only commit immorality, but also idolatry, so the Midian girls did it as well, not just the Moab girls. And they were both involved. And Cusbi, the one who Pinchas kills along with Zimri, is from Midian. He kills them. And she's a daughter, she's a princess. And she's involved in this mishigas that went on. So the Midian is very involved over here. Even though Midian is not directly threatened by the Jewish people, but they are involved. And it's their advice that brings Bilam into the whole discussion. But the truth is, we find Midian mentioned earlier in the Chumash, although only in passing. I wouldn't expect anybody to remember this. This is just a passing reference to Midian. Yes?
Did Yitzchak have anything to do with Midian?
I don't know that Yitzchak had anything to do with Midian. It's a good guess. I'm going to show you where there's a passing reference to Midian, but it's going to be significant for what we're going to learn tonight. If you turn back again, hold 904. Let's turn back to Parshas Vayeshev, page 204. Yosef is in the pit, and the brothers are thinking of leaving him there to die. Then they decide, you know what? Yehuda says, excuse me, why should we kill him? Let's sell him. There's a group of Yishma'elim coming by. There's a group of Yishmael people coming by. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim melech haolam shehakol nivra. So, let's sell him to the Yishma'elim. So, the pasuk says in Chaf Hei 25, Vayeshvu le'achol lechem, they sat down to eat bread. Vayisu einehem vayiru, they lifted their eyes and they saw. Vinei orchas Yishma'elim. Behold, there was a caravan of Yishma'elim, ba'am yigilad, coming from Gilad. Ugmalehem nosim nechosu svivalo, tolchim lo rimitzrayma, they were carrying all kinds of spices to bring down to Egypt. Vayomer Yehuda el Echav, Yehuda said to his brothers, Ma betza, what money is there, kinaro gesachinu, for us to kill our brother? V'chisinu estamo, and cover his blood, in other words, and hide the fact that we killed him. L'chuvinim karenu la'yishma'ilim, let's sell him to the Yishma'ilim. V'yodinu al tivo, and our hand will not be against him. Ki achinu v'sorenu hu, because our brother is our flesh. Vayishmu echav, his brothers listened. And here we have a curiosity. Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim. Rather than Yishma'ilim coming by, there were Midyanim, who were merchants who came by. They were the middlemen. They were the merchants who acted as the middleman between the brothers and the Ishmaelim. Vayim shechu vayalu es Yosef min habor, vayim kiru es Yosef la Ishmaelim ba'asrim kasef. They got Yosef out of the pit, they sold him to the Ishmaelim for 20 silver pieces. And they brought Yosef to Mitzrayim. So the Midianim were actually involved in the sale of Yosef. Now we've just learned Midian's mother was Keturah, who is Hagar. Yishmael's mother is Hagar. So Midian and Yishmael were
brothers.
They were brothers. They were brothers, half brothers through them. They were full brothers. They were full brothers. So the Midianim and the Ishmaelim were actually more closely related than we were to the Ishmaelim. Yosef was a cousin as well that they were selling. But Midian and Ishmael were even more closely related. And Midian was involved in the sale of Yosef. Rashi tells us over here, when it says that the Midianim came by, Rashi says, Zu hi shiara acheres. That's another caravan. V'hodiyacha ha-kosuv shenimkar pa'amim harbe. The pasuk is teaching us that Yosef was sold many times. Meaning it wasn't a clean sale. It wasn't the brothers to the Ishmaelim. It was the brothers to the Midianim to the Ishmaelim. There was an exchange of hands. In fact, on the next page, when they finally get to Egypt, it doesn't say the Ishmaelim sold Yosef to the Egypt, but rather it says the Hamidonim in Pasuk Lamed Vav verse 36. It says the Hamidonim Machru Yosef El Mitzrayim sold him to Mitzrayim. Midonim might be Midian, but there was also a man named
his brother.
Yeah, there was also a man named Midon. So I'm not sure if this is the same group or not. The point is that Yosef was sold over and over again, and it wasn't just the Ishmaelim, it was also the Midianim who were involved in Yosef's sale. So, we find Midian mentioned in the sale of Yosef. We find Yisro is from Midian. Of course, Moshe's wife, Tzipora, is from Midian. And we find that Midian gets involved in the whole issue with Bilam, and then finally with the girls and getting the Jews to sin. Yeah.
Okay, I've taken it for granted, but this is a chance for me to ask you, was Tzipora actually a righteous woman on her own, having nothing to do with Yitro?
Question is, was Tzipora a righteous woman? The Gemara says that Tzipora was unquestionably righteous. The Gemara says that she was, that when it says, Ki isha chushis lakach, that is to tell us that she was both beautiful and righteous. Yeah. That's the background of Midian. Now, Midian is going to be decimated in this war that we're about to have with them. They caused us to sin. And as you know, causing someone to sin is worse than causing them physical harm. And they caused us to sin. They deliberately caused us to sin. They set out to make us sin. Which is a horrible thing to do. To make anybody sin is a horrible thing to do. So, therefore Hashem says, you're gonna have to really punish them. And they're gonna get punished very, very, very harshly, as we're about to see. So, that's the people that we're talking about. But, there's more issues. There are more issues that are gonna come together over here. We have we'll call it the Yosef element of Midian. We have the Yisro / Tzipora / Moshe Rabbeinu element of Midian. And then we have the Bilam / Moav / Pinchas element of Midian. Yeah.
Was Moshe, did he ever express any hakaras hatov? Like he could say, I was there for...
Okay, good. Okay, the question is, did Moshe express any hakaras hatov towards Midian? Like we find, as you, I assume you mean, like with the plagues,
right,
that Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to hit the water or the
ground
because they saved him.
Right.
Right. So we don't find that over here, although Moshe is not going to lead the war. So it could be that that's part of the reason why he doesn't lead the war. The war is going to be led by Pinchas. Pinchas is going to lead this war. Yehoshua was a good guess because he led the war against Amalek. But it's going to be Pinchas who's going to lead this war. As we're going to see, a lot of things are going to come together with this war. So back on page 904, let's read a little bit of the story here. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayidaber Moshe el ha'am leimor. Moshe spoke to the nation saying, Heichal tzume itchem anashim latzava. It should mean like strengthen or arm. Yeah, arm men from you, from your ranks, for the war. V'yu al Midyan, they will be against Midyan. Laseis nikmas Hashem b'Midyan, to bring the revenge of Hashem against Midyan. First, it said in pasuk Aleph in verse 1, it's in verse, excuse me, pasuk Beis verse 2, it says nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael, take the revenge of the Jewish people. Here it says the revenge of Hashem. So Chazal point out over here, as they point out many places in the Chumash, that Hashem and the Jewish people are considered synonymous in many ways. Any enemy that starts up with us is as if they're starting up with Hashem. Any enemy that rejects Hashem, it is as if they're starting up with us. We are considered the same entity when it comes to the evil of the world. It's all one thing. It is not incorrect. It is correct to say that the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, were anti-God. Since they were anti-us, that means they were anti-God. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You may wonder, what is this issue of revenge? Don't we have a mitzvah of lo sikom v'lo sitar? Don't take revenge and don't bear a grudge. But the rest of that pasuk says, es b'nei amecha. We're not allowed to take revenge nor bear a grudge against ourselves, against each other, against a fellow Jew. There is no such prohibition of taking revenge against a non-Jew. As we mentioned, when we learned about not taking revenge, when we learned that in Parashas Kedoshim, we discussed how the truth is revenge logically makes a lot of sense. We know that Hashem runs the world, mida kineged mida, measure for measure. We know that's how He runs the world. And if a person does an Avero in a certain way, that's the way the punishment comes. If he does a mitzvah in a certain way, that's where the mitzvah comes. We know that is the way it works. And that's logical. And it's fair. So therefore, revenge actually makes a lot of sense. You hurt me, I should hurt you. It makes a lot of sense. But the Torah says, we're not allowed to do that to each other. With each other, we have to not take revenge. But that is really an anomaly. Really, revenge makes sense. And it is not prohibited when it comes to non-Jews. And we find that Hashem Himself takes revenge. As it says, Kael Nekamos Hashem. Hashem is the God of revenge. He will punish those who sin. And here, Hashem is telling us to be the ones to punish Midyan. Pasuk Daled, verse 4. The Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu did not hold back, even though he knew that his death was now going to be linked to this mission. It's his last mission, which means however long it takes to carry out this mission, he's going to live longer. But he did not delay. Hashem said to do it, so he did it. Pasuk Daled, verse 4. Elef lamate, 1,000 men per tribe, l'chol matos Yisrael, from all the tribes of the Jewish people, tishlechu latzava, you should send for the army. So there are going to be 1,000 soldiers per tribe, vayimasru me'afei Yisrael, they were given over from the thousands of the Jewish people, elef lamate, 1,000 per tribe, Shneim asar elef, 12,000 chalutzei tzava, armed for war. 12 tribes, 12,000 men.
Do the Levites usually participate in
it? Right. So the question is, does this include Levi? If it does include Levi, then Ephraim and Manasseh would have only been one, because it's only 12,000. Or does it not include Levi, and then Ephraim and Manasseh will be split into two? In this case, it does include Levi, I believe. I'm almost positive that's the case. In this case, it does include Levi. Yes, Levi is included. And therefore, we have to assume that Manasseh and Ephraim were treated as one tribe in this case rather than two. I don't know why that is. I don't know why in this case that would be the case. But at any rate, It is 12,000 men. So first of all, it says, Vayimasru, they were given over. That sounds like they were forced into service. One might be tempted to say they didn't want to fight because they were scared of the war, but that is not the case. They were very brave, and we will see they were extremely successful in this war. But the Chazal tell us they didn't want to go because they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu's death hinged on this war. So maybe Moshe acted with zrizus, with alacrity, but they didn't want to act with zrizus. They preferred to delay as long as possible to keep Moshe Rabbeinu alive. But they were given over against their will to fight. 12,000 men is a very, very small army. That's a pitiful army, in fact. The 12,000 men fighting against an entire nation of Midian, they should not have been able to be successful. But we are going to find, not only were they successful, but they lost no one. Every single soldier came back alive. All of the 12,000. They didn't lose any soldiers in this war. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayishlach Osama Moshe Elef Lamatelat Sava. Moshe sent them 1,000 per tribe for the war. Osam, he sent them. Ve'es Pinchas ben Elazar HaKoen Latsava. And Pinchas ben Elazar to the war. Uchlei HaKodesh. And the sanctified utensils. We have to know what that is in a minute. Vachatzotzros HaTruah Biyado. And the trumpets were in his hand. The trumpets, which were used to call to war, as well as other functions, they were also brought to this war. What are the clay hakodesh? What are the utensils, the sanctified utensils? Those were the aron and the tzitz. The aron and the tzitz. The tzitz is the headband of the Kohen Gadol, the golden headband. And also the Aron. It is unclear to me which Aron this was. I think it was the Aron, the Ark, that held the broken Luchos, not the one that was kept in the Kodesh HaKadosh. There were two Arons. There was one that held the second set of Luchos that was kept in the Kodesh HaKadosh, in the Holy of Holies. And then there was another Aron that had the broken Luchos, that they took with them to war. And I'm pretty sure that's what we're talking about over here. Yes?
I'm so sorry. I missed a step. Why is Moshe going to die when they win the war?
Because Hashem told them. Hashem told them in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, after you do this, Achar Te'el Sefel Mecha, then you're going to die. So, why are they taking the tzitz, the headband, into war? Pinchas is not the Kohen Gadol. Now Pinchas will eventually become the Kohen Gadol. Right now Elazar is the Kohen Gadol. After the death of Elazar, Pinchas will succeed him as Kohen Gadol at the end of the book of Yehoshua. But right now he's not the Kohen Gadol. So why is he bringing the tzitz into war? And why is Pinchas the one leading this war? It should either be Moshe Rabbeinu. If not Moshe Rabbeinu, it should be Yehoshua. Why is it Pinchas? So, Rashi has three explanations for why it was Pinchas. One is because, I'll go backwards, one is because he was the Mashuach Milchama. We know that there is a Kohen who is anointed as the war Kohen. When we learn about, we haven't gotten to this yet, at the end of Parashas Shoftim in Sefer Devarim, there's a discussion about going to war. And you know the famous rules, a person who just got married, who just built a house, etc., they go back. Person who's afraid, they go home. So there is a Kohen who is called the Mashuach Melchama, anointed for war, and he's the one who is in charge of the war effort. I don't know if you call him a general, but he's in charge of the war effort. So who was the Mashuach Melchama at this time? Who was that anointed for war? It was Pinchas. So that's one reason why it was Pinchas who led this war. Another reason is because Pinchas is going to finish the job that he started. After all, there had been a plague because of the girls of Moab and Midian. Pinchas stopped that plague by killing Zimri and killing Cusbi. Now the Jews are going to punish Midian for what they did, and therefore Pinchas, who started the turnaround, who got the Jews out of that rut and started them back on an upward trajectory, he's going to finish the job. But maskel b'mitzvah, omrim lo gemar. Someone who begins a mitzvah, you tell him, finish it. You should be the one to finish it. So therefore, Pinchas is given the zechus, the merit of finishing this mitzvah of punishing the Midianim. But the Gemara tells us yet another reason why Pinchas was the one to lead this war. Pinchas has an ancestor. Now we know on his father's side, Pinchas is the son of Eleazar, the grandson of Aaron. That we know. But Pinchas on his mother's side comes from Mibinos Putiel, from the daughters of Putiel. What is Binos Putiel? What does that mean, the daughters of Putiel? Who is Putiel? So the Gemara tells us, Putiel, what's that?
Israel.
So Putiel has two meanings. One of them is Yosef. Shepitpeit b'Yitzro, that he fought against and defeated his Yetzer Hara. Yosef, who was managed to defeat his Yetzer Hara when with the wife of Potiphar, so he's given the name Putiel, and the descendant of Yosef through his mother's side is Pinchas. Therefore, Pinchas is now going to punish the Midianim, but included in the punishment of the Midianim is Pinchas is now going to avenge the sale of his great, great, great maternal grandfather. Because the Midianim were involved in the sale of Yosef, and now Pinchas is going to take revenge not only for getting the Jews to sin, but also for the sale of Yosef. Now that seems very far afield. We're going to analyze this, but let's just give one very quick insight right now before we analyze it any further. Yosef is sold by the Midianim to Mitzrayim. He ends up in the house of Potiphar, and then he is sorely tested by the wife of Potiphar with the sin of Gilui Arayus of immorality. And here, what did the Minyanim do? They had their daughters get the Jewish men to sin with the Avera of Gilui Arayus of immorality. So it comes full circle that Pinchas, who's going to avenge what the Minyanim did with their daughters and the Jewish men, he's also going to do that by avenging their sale of Yosef. In other words, what gives Pinchas power over the Midianim? The Midianim caused the Jews to sin. The Jews who sinned would not have had power over the Midianim. They succumbed to the sin that the Midianim put in front of them. But Pinchas is going to come with the strength of Yosef, who the Midianim likewise put into a similar sakana, a similar test, not directly, but indirectly, put him in the line of fire of the same sin, the sin of immorality. And Yosef stood the test. That gives Pinchas the power now to punish the Midianim. And there it returns full circle. But the truth is that, as Mrs. Kaiser mentioned, Pinchas's mother not only comes from Yosef, from the daughters of Putiel, not only from Yosef, but also from
Yisro.
From Yisro. She comes from Yosef and Yisro. Yisro, shepitim agolim la'avodah zara, that he fattened calves for avodah zara, for idolatry. So Yisro also is an ancestor of Pinchas. On his mother's side, the Gemara says either his mother's mother comes from Yosef and his mother's father comes from Yisro, or his mother's mother comes from Yisro and his mother's father comes from Yosef. The Gemara leaves it inconclusive which one it was. It doesn't seem like it matters that much for this discussion. So Pinchas, although he is a Kohen and he comes from Elazar or comes from Aaron, but on his mother's side, he descends from Yosef and he descends from Yisro. The mother of Pinchas, Elazar's wife, is this coming together of Yisro and Yosef. They are responsible for Elazar's wife, the wife of the Kohen Gadol, the mother of Pinchas. She must have been a very special lady. To be married to Elazar and be the mother of Pinchas, we're clearly not dealing with someone who is run of the mill. And she descends from Yisro and from Yosef. Now Yisro also started in Midian. That's where he comes from. And what stands out about Yisro? What did he do that no one else did?
He investigated every religion.
And?
And he found them all wanting except for monotheism.
Okay, so he investigated all the religions, he worshipped everything, and he found them all to be lies and wrong, except for Yiddishkeit. He became a Jew. So Yisro repudiated Avodah Zarah, idolatry, and became a Jew. The daughters of Midian got the Jews to sin through immorality, but they also got the Jews to sin with Peor, with Avodah Zarah. The punishment against the people of Midian here is twofold. It's first of all because of the immorality, but also because of the Avodah Zarah. So again, where does Pinchas have the strength to defeat Midian? Because Pinchas comes from Yisro, who is himself from Midian. And rather than act like his Midiani fellow nation people, his brothers, who were the ones who not only worshipped Avodah Zarah, but also got the Jews to worship Avodah Zarah, but Yisro rejects Avodah Zarah in favor of Yiddishkeit. And so, Pinchas, who comes from Yisro, is now able to say, you're going to get punished now, Midian, and I'm going to come with the strength of the one from you who knew better, who acted the way he should have acted, who instead of acting like you did, he managed to grab hold of the ancestry of Midian back to Avraham Avinu. And it's with that power that I'm going to defeat you. So Pinchas comes into this representing the two people who turn the tables on Midian's behavior. And therefore Pinchas is going to be able to punish Midian. But we're not done yet. Yisro also has another piece of history which is very, very important. Yisro was involved in a very important tribunal way back before we ended up as slaves in Egypt.
Yeah, he was one of the advisors to Paro.
He was one of the advisors to Paro. And Paro wanted to know what to do with the Jewish people. And what did Yisro say? He said, don't enslave them. There was another person who ran away, who didn't want to be involved in the decision. That was Eov. Eov ran away. But there was a third person who advised to enslave the Jewish people. And his name was Bilam. The three were Yisro, Eov, and Bilam. Yisro was diametrically opposed to Bilam. Eov ran away. He didn't want to say one way or the other. That's why he gets afflictions. But Yisro said, don't do it. Bilam said, do it. So Yisro, therefore, is rewarded by becoming a great person himself and having a daughter to marry Moshe Rabbeinu. And Bilam ends up as the Rasha that he is. So, here, in this battle with Midian, Pinchas also represents Yisro, who is the antithesis of Bilam. Why is that important? first of all, Bilam triggered this whole thing. Bilam is the one who gave the advice for these girls to get the Jews to sin. But Bilam is also going to be in this war. Bilam is going to be there, and Bilam is going to actually behave in a supernatural way, which would have given him and the Midianim an advantage in the war. Bilam is going to pioneer the warfare through the air. Bilam is going to fly. He's going to use sorcery to fly and in that manner attack the Jews from above, which is a huge advantage. Not only that, he's going to allow or give the power of flight to the five heads of Midian. All five of them, including Cusbi's father, Tzur. He's going to have them fly. And that flight is going to give them an advantage and make them very, very dangerous. And Pinchas is going to bring them down. Because Pinchas will say the name of Hashem and also fly up into the air. And then he will take that tzitz that he's holding. He'll take that head, headband, the golden headband, which has the name of Hashem on it, show it to these five kings and also to Bilam, and that will snap their power and they will fall to their deaths. That is also going to happen over here with Pinchas. It's going to be Pinchas against Bilam. The Pinchas who kills Cusbi and kills Zimri, now he is going to be up against Bilam. And there's not going to be anybody else up there. It's just him and Bilam. There's no other people in the air. It's just the two of them. And it's going to be a showdown between Pinchas and Bilam. So let's read some of that inside. Most of that is the Medrash, the Gemara. But I will show you here part of it inside. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vayitzbu'u al Midyan. And they fought against Midyan. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, like Hashem commanded Moshe, vayahargu kol zachar, they killed every male. They killed all the adult men of Midyan. That's what I mean. They were very harshly punished. They didn't just defeat Midyan, and now Midyan is subjugated to the Jewish people. They killed all the men. Ves malchei Midyan hargu al chalaleihem. And the kings of Midian, they killed on the corpses. Why does it say on the corpses? Because they fell from the air onto the corpses. And who are those five? Es Evi, Ves Rekem, Ves Tzur, Ves Chur, Ves Reva. Those are the five. Why five? Because we read in Parshas Chayei Sarah that Midian had five sons. Epha, Epher, Eldaah, etc. He had five sons. Chanoch, Avidah, and Eldaah. So he had five sons. Each son was one, if you want to call it, a tribe of Midian. They had five kings. These were they. Evi, Rekem, Tzur. Tzur is Cusbi's father. Cusbi, Bas, Tzur. Chur and Reva. Chamesh, Malchim, Midian. Those are the five kings of Midian. Veiz, Bilam, Ben, Boor, Haragu, Becharav, and Bilam, the son of Boor, was killed by the sword. Pinchas kills Bilam. The Medrash spells it out in a very dramatic way that Pinchas flew up into the air. He showed the tzitz to the five kings. They all fell and died. They were killed. And then he goes after Bilam. And he grabs Bilam. And he pulls out his sword to kill Bilam. And Bilam starts to plead with him. He says, no, don't do it. I promise I'll never curse the Jews. I don't do that again. And Pinchas says to him, you caused the plague, you caused the Jews to sin. Bilam, if you'll recall, was a descendant of Lavan. You're the one who's been this bad apple this whole time, and you need to be killed. And he personally kills Bilam. Who is Tzur? Tzur, the father of Cusbi. Cusbi Bas Tzur, he's one of the five kings over here. Who is Tzur? So the Medrash says, Tzur is Balak. Balak, the king of Moab, he is also killed over here. He's really from Midian, as was mentioned earlier. He's really from Midian, and he is killed as well. Pasuk test verse 9. Vayishbu v'nei Yisrael es neshei Midian ve'es tapam. The Jews took captive the wives of Midian and their young children. Ve'es kol behem tam, ve'es kol mitnehem, ve'es kol chelam, bazazu. And all their animals, all their cattle, and all of their wealth, they took as spoils. Ve'es kol areihem b'mosh vosam, and all their cities where they dwelled. Ve'es kol tirosam, and all of their... What does that word mean? All of their palaces, sarfu ba'ish, they burned in fire. Va'ikhu es kol ha'shalol ve'es kol ha'malkoach, they took all of the spoils and the booty, ba'adamu va'behema, amongst the people and the animals. Va'yaviu el Moshe ve'el Elazar ha'kohen, and they brought them to Moshe and to Elazar the kohen, ve'el Adas ben Yisrael, to the Jewish people, es ha'shevi, the human captives, Ves Hamalkoach, Ves HaShalol, the animals and the money, El HaMachanet, to the camp, El Arbos Moav, to the plains of Moav, Asher Al Yadin Recho, which was on the Jordan River across from Yericho. So they bring everything back. They were very faithful. They did not take anything for themselves. They brought it back to be divided up appropriately, which is, we will see, is going to happen. Yes?
So I remember earlier you had said that when Bilam gets prophecy, unfortunately, he uses it for evil purposes. It makes him evil. The same thing with any wizardry or sorcery, that when he has access to something, he uses it for a very bad purpose.
Correct.
Okay. Yitro, besides being an advisor to Paro, was he also one of the wizards or magicians too?
The question is, was Yisro one of, besides being an advisor to Paro, was he one of the wizards or sorcerers? It doesn't say it. I don't know. It doesn't say that it was. It seems that that group was a different group.
Okay.
So it seems, but I don't know for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. So they didn't, and here they don't take any booty.
Right. The soldiers don't take any booty, right. Yes.
When did Yisro leave Paro? If he was in Midian when Moshe went, he had already left.
Right. So when did Yisro leave Paro? So he left before Moshe was born. He left
before the slavery.
Yeah, before the slavery. He would have left. Now, there's a lot more that we're going to discuss about this war, the aftermath of the war. That's going to be starting next week. We'll discuss that. We have one more topic to discuss tonight. But we're going to get to the aftermath of this war. The aftermath is going to involve the booty and the spoils. They brought back with them human spoils of war, POWs, who should become slaves. When we learned about slavery back in Parashas Mishpatim, we explained then that a POW becomes a slave. A prisoner of war becomes a slave. That's the way the Torah understands what happens to someone who's captured in war. We discussed this at the time. What do you do with POWs? It's a really big problem. You capture a whole bunch of very, very able-bodied men. So you've got thousands of able-bodied men. What do you do with them? So they become slaves. Now here, there were no able-bodied men.
Right.
They were killed. But I'm just pointing out to you that that's what happens to POWs. They become slaves. So here they've got human booty of war. They have animals. They have all kinds of items. So we have to discuss, and we're going to discuss, what happens to the human beings, what happens to the animals, what happens to the utensils they bring back. Aren't they not kosher? They're bringing back pots, pans, cups, silverware. Aren't they not kosher? So the laws of what you do when you acquire non-kosher utensils from non-Jews is going to be learned here. This is going to be our source for it, a major source for it, as we'll discuss. But we have one more topic to discuss tonight. That's all for later. We have one more topic to discuss tonight, which is this whole sin that was committed through Bilam involved two nations: the Midian girls and the Moab girls. why are the Jews only commanded to kill out Midian, but not Moab? And of course, the answer is, because Hashem says, I have a very special person that still needs to be born. She wasn't born yet. Who's going to come from Moab? And of course, that is Rus. And if Moab would have, all the men of Moab would have been killed here, then that would have been it. There would not be any future descendants of Moab. And so, therefore, despite the fact that Moab deserved the punishment that Midian got, all the men are wiped out. And it's going to be worse. Well, we're going to learn next week, Mirz Hashem, that we're not done with the executions that are going to take place of Midian. It's going to be worse. So Moab deserves it as well. But Hashem says, because there is going to be Rus, therefore we need to preserve this nation. So as bad as Moab was, and that's a very, very important context for Megillas Rus, when we read about Rus coming from Moab, it's important to bear in mind that Moab was considered to be evil, evil, evil. They really deserve to be wiped out. We looked at them with enmity. They caused us to sin, which is a horrible thing. Evil people. And when Elimelech goes to Moab, he's going to the enemy. And when he brings back Rus, he's bringing back, no, when he brings back, when Naomi brings back Rus, she's bringing back the enemy. She's not someone they're going to welcome with open arms. She and all of Moab are persona non grata in the Jewish people. And therefore, when Boaz shows such kindness to Rus, Rus can't believe it. Rus says, what are you doing? Why are you showing me such kindness? Because it really was an anomaly. No one was going to give Rus the time of day. Because she comes from this disgusting, despicable nation of Moab, who really deserved the punishment that happened here to Midian. That's a context that one has to understand in the whole Rus story and the whole Moab story. But it's also important to note that the fact that Hashem said to leave Moab alive means the Jews understood that there must be some good that's going to come out of Moab. Otherwise, Hashem would have said to wipe them out. So the fact that Hashem said to leave Moab alive meant that there was some understanding that something good would come from there, which that understanding was known by all the great leaders of the Jewish people. Elimelech knew this. That's why Elimelech went to Moab. Because he knew that there was still something good that was going to come out of Moab. That also is the backdrop of the Rus story, which has its roots over here as well. Okay, so next week, Mitzvah Shem will continue with the aftermath of this war.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.